The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR sponsored by AIB. Connor and Conan, two names sound very, very alike here, lads, with me as usual on a Thursday. We've Aidan O'Shea coming up on the show in the next part, who was at the launch of the International Rules yesterday, and he's obviously captain. So I've got 15 minutes with him, and it's always good to talk to Aidan. So I want to start off with you, Connor, because you're a dark horse. We were talking about county finals in a full slot here last Thursday, and you have an intermediate county final in Mayo, and not a dicky bird, did you say?
Media
about
ban, obviously.
I didn't mention the media ban we were under for the time, yeah.
So you drew the intermediate final, and when's the replay, and tell us about that draw.
We're back out on Saturday night in McHale Park. So I play for Kilchamoss, we're playing Moy Davitts, who would be our closest rivals. It was very close on Sunday, actually. We went 7 points up at the start of the second half.
Missed the boot.
We got a goal at the start of the second half. We were playing into a strong breeze in the second half. I was thinking if we didn't concede a goal, we'd be fine, of course, with 2 minutes to go. We conceded that goal. They got a point immediately afterwards, and from being 7 points up and thinking we had it, I went to thinking we were a point down, we were going to lose it. But one of our subs came on, Tomás Keegan, and kicked an absolute whomper from about 40 yards to level it. So yeah, we're back out Saturday night. So I know I'd say both of us would be thinking we both threw it away and both had it in our grasp at the same time. So yeah, it's all to play for again.
So if you had have won it, you would have celebrated all week, and you are intermediate level, which leads a perfect segue into the next part. And this is the investigation that's going into the Ballyragget intermediate hurling team, who were up to all sorts after they won their county final on Sunday. So there's obviously pictures doing the rounds on WhatsApp, lads, and when these start, it just spreads throughout the country like wildfire. It's incredible. And they're obviously in the pub. This is the way the club are going to help with the investigation. The Kilkenny County Board are going to investigate. I'm not sure what you need to investigate. You just need to look at the pictures to know what's after happening here. It wasn't a GAA event. It wasn't in a GAA clubhouse. It was a Tuesday night in a pub. The team were there celebrating. The only thing linking it to the GAA is that the cup was there and it found itself in between two huge boobs. And to be honest, I found that kind of stuff a little bit funny. But like, I mean, these things can easily get out of hand. And, you know, whether it was a team decision, we don't know. That could be two fellas just down the back of the pub. Let's do this for the crack. Next minute, two women land in like this and all bets are off and everyone's drunk and it's great crack. And then you have fellas on their phones, weasels I would call them, and they're taking pictures, embarrassing the young fella that was there, embarrassing the two girls that were involved as well. And suddenly this is going viral. And my whole thoughts about this is that these kind of things go on stag parties all over the country every weekend. I don't think my issue with this whole thing is the weasels that are around videoing this, trying to go viral themselves. Or I think it, like, trying to make a name for themselves online or Snapchat. It's this Snapchat culture, lads, where all these things are being recorded, and now look at the kind of deep water they're in, and the laugh has turned to the other side of their faces, and it's all because of these fellas with their phones up, and they need to get footage of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's a very tough one. Like, I see Connor looking at me as if to say, go you ahead, Connor. I remember seeing a Sunday World expose, and it was like going behind the scenes at a swingers party, and it's like, what? Just let them do what they want to do. Like, you know, why are you bringing behind the scenes cameras and all this?
Swingers party.
Yeah, but like, this is
stop raising the bar here.
No, this is tough. Yeah, this is in a bar, and it's two people come along. And
but like, everyone in that room looked to be enjoying themselves. That's the way I look at it. So it's not a huge scandal, in my eyes. It looked like the two girls in question were escorts, not strippers, because there was sex acts being performed.
Well, and for, when you go on to, I went on to the website that they're purported to have come from, and it's like, you know, they're paid for the company, and not anything else is purely coincidental. Like, just so we can get that straight.
Yeah. But the weasel thing is a great point, because remember, like, intermediate again, Lee Keegan last year after the Connacht final, and I remember thinking at the time that, the Westport lads are going to be so pissed off with the weasel that got that out. And then I thought about it and seeing the videos then during the week. So many people have their phones. It's like, apart from the fella that was involved, every single person had their phone out. And it's really hard then to determine whom the rat or the weasel might have been. Yeah. And not only that, now we've suggested already that the subsequent WhatsApp messages that have filtered out from supposedly the Ballyragget group, you know, they might have been doctored. But if they were true, they're like, God, I might, you know, if somebody not only leaked the videos and now you're leaking the messages that are coming from the WhatsApp group.
I cannot understand the mentality. I'm 39, so I'm a different generation than this. If I see a bit of a laugh in a pub, the last thing in my head is to take my phone out. I wouldn't even entertain my phone. I could have 5 missed calls, 10 texts on my phone when I'm in a pub, and I wouldn't even take it out to look at it. But these fellas just immediately, it's the Snapchat generation. They're looking for this. And you go out with people that are on Snapchat and their phones are out and they're doing all this and they're all putting it into a story which they're going to put up at the end of the night that this was my night out. Oh my God, I can't comprehend this, lads. I think this Snapchat is a sick, sick app.
Sure, many times you get a video sent through to you as well and it's just like a county player that you might know or looks like him anyway and it's drunk. You're like, why are you sending me that? You know, let him be drunk or whatever it is. Like, and it's just, you're right. Like, boys just have this sort of desperation or whatever, like obsession with getting the phones out and recording everything and then sending it on. Now, maybe it's a bit different because some of the scenes some people might have thought were unsavoury in the Ballyragget thing, especially in a public place. So, you know, maybe it divided the country a bit more, definitely, but it was seen by the country, which is really weird, especially if you're involved in it as well.
I think most people that were involved in teams wouldn't have found that awfully shocking. Like, I mean, that's just the reality of it. I think people who are maybe not involved in that might look at that and go, God, that's absolutely horrific. I wasn't too shocked about it. I think everyone should move on from it because Ballyragget played a Kildare champions, Ard Clock, in a Leinster Intermediate game that might have a lot more spotlight on this game than what normally would have. That's happening in Newbridge on November the 4th. Because we want to have to move on, as the international rules squad was announced yesterday and there's 14 counties represented, which is great. 21 strong panel. There's 2 new changes to it. Sean Porter and Niall Grimley got on it last night. Conor McKenna has been ruled out through injury and Paul Kerrigan, unfortunately, with Nemo Rangers, he can't commit. So there's 12 debutants. I'll quickly read them all out. Chris Barrett, Killian Clark, Kevin Feely, Paul Geaney, Brennan Harrison, Niall Murphy, Paul Murphy, Carla Connell, Niall Sludden, Enda Smith, Connor Sweeney and Shane Walsh. Lot of debutants that haven't played the game before, nearly too many. No Dublin players. So my annoyance about this is poor Paul Kerrigan, who'd want to play. Gary Brennan might have to pull out because his club, Clan D Gad, I hadn't actually said that word before, they're in the county final at the weekend against Kilmurry, Kilbricken, and he could be out as well if they win that. So unlike previous trips to Australia, there's no accommodations being made by provincial competitions to try and accommodate this competition. So again, whinge, whinge, whinge. This is an Irish international team that can't field their strongest team because there's other competitions running at the same time. Again, CPA, Master Fixtures List, solution to all this. Opposition by the GAA. Discuss.
Well, yeah, and like you just even like the people you've mentioned is annoying, but then you look at Chrissy McCaig, loves the International Rules Series, and he did play even with Slough, and he went in that run in 2014 and he played back to back games, and but he can't do it now because he's obviously involved with hurling as well. And like you're the Hughes brothers from Monaghan, they're going to meet, like, you know, some big players that are involved all over the country still with their clubs, and we're not going to see them just because we're shoehorning it in. And then that affects the whole series then as well, because when some of the biggest players in Ireland that should be on the team aren't there, people don't have as big of interest in it.
Yeah, no, that's it. And like, I mean, do people look forward to this international rules anymore? Like, I'm a huge fan of it. I played on it in 1998, something I hate talking about, that, you know, that I've played for Ireland. I was only 20 and I made the Ireland team. But like, I mean, the reality of it is I thought it was brilliant. It was fantastic that year. I really enjoyed it. Players all enjoyed it. After 2006, the big row, 2005, there was a lot of violence with Philip Jordan out in Australia. And then 2006, the flare up in Croke Park. And then it took a year off in 07 and they went back in 08. And I think since 08, it's lost its appeal because, like, I mean, we don't want violence. We don't want these huge bus stops. And Graham Geraghty was brought to hospital in Croke Park that day and no one wants to see that. But we want to see big hits and we want to see a bit of rough. We want to see a bit of trash talking and we want to see the odd kind of scuffle between these lads. They're so nice to each other now that the edge has gone off it. And me, as a huge fan of it, my interest in it has been on the way in the last few years.
It was nearly in the last few years as well that because there was so much violence you know, in 2004, I think 2006 particularly, that in the years afterwards there was a real conscious effort for there not to be any.
Oh yeah.
And it diluted it as a result. And the other thing is, you kind of mentioned it there, you know, there are some players that really buy into it that can't play, and then there are others, like, not everybody buys into it. And that's the thing for me always with the international rules, and that's on both sides. Not everyone in Ireland, I don't think, buys into it, and definitely not everyone in Australia buys into it as well. I mean, they changed their rules a couple of years ago to you have to be all Australian, or you have to receive, you know, you have to get all the Australian honours to play. But at the same time, I was just looking at the squad there. I'm interested that Gary Ablett is playing. When I was in Australia for a little while years ago, this is about 7-8 years ago, and Gary Ablett was the main man.
He played for Liverpool there, did he?
Same guy, Gary Mabbitt, is it? Gary Ablett is now making his debut, and he's 33. So, like, I don't know if that say much about something about the international rules as a series, that this guy has been the star man for, you know, in AFL for 10 years, and now he's only playing against Ireland probably in the twilight of his career, and not everybody down there buys into it as well. So I think that kind of, when there's that little bit of apathy, I think it kind of takes away from it a little bit.
It does a little bit. And Aidan O'Matney was saying last night on Sports Joe Live that he saw the Aussie squad and there's no representation from the both teams that were in the grand final, you know, which isn't ideal either. Yeah. It's a bit like the Dublin thing. They'll be looking at us saying, why is there no Dublin lads? And Dublin are on the road 3 years, three in a row. They're in the middle of club championships. I think Paul Mannion was at a couple of trials. I think Johnny Cooper was asked in, and he got some work commitments. And you go through the whole double. There was 10 lads asked in, and they all. Paul Mannion went to. Did I say Paul Mannion went to trials? Mm. He did. He'd be brilliant at it. Jack McCaffrey'd be brilliant at it. But with work is another thing. 3 weeks annual leave.
Yeah.
15 days in October. Now, mate, you don't have 15 days left in October. Then you're looking for unpaid leave. Now, I know the international rules. You get compensated for 3 weeks wages when you go over, so they give you a nice few quid for going. But still, if you're in a career that you care about, you're leaving your team for 3 weeks, they're picking up the pieces, you become public enemy number one within your team in work. Like, I mean, they're sick covering for you all the time.
You'd imagine you would have had to take a couple of days off, more than a couple of days off during the year as an inter-county player as well, whether it be training weeks or days off in the lead up to games or after games. So that I think that aspect of it isn't taken into account all the time. You said like 3 weeks annual leave. Inter-county players have definitely taken a week.
Yeah, and the team holiday then. The Dublin will be gone 2 weeks probably somewhere in. Like, I mean, how much time can you get off?
It's a shame though, isn't it? Now, when Irish players are physically at the peak that they've ever been, and they're probably ready to compete with the Aussies physically. It used to always be like they were better footballers and they were tough, but they always got the shit kicked out of them, most of them, apart from Kieran McGeaney and Sean Murray Lockhart, maybe. And Aidan O'Mahony loved it as well.
Kieran McDonald was
we'll keep naming
them. Tough man, we'll all name our favourite players.
But like, you know, but now it's actually, we're so well trained, we're almost professional athletes ourselves, and you could go down and have, now you're probably condoning a big fist fight down there, but like, that is what sort of got everyone up for it. I always remember some footage, even Peter Canavan, you know, getting involved in a few scraps and that. And yeah, I liked it because he got the shit kicked out of him as well. But
Ackermanis, he used to go with, they were great days. But maybe that was the novelty of it, because 1998, the year I was on it, was the first year it was reintroduced from the 80s, when there was a lot of violence as well. So there was a huge novelty factor. And Australia, the year that I was on it, was, geez, I've said I was on it maybe four times now so far. I don't know how long we're in.
You were on there.
It was a big surprise at the time. Like, I was only 20. But they picked, this was Australia not really knowing what to expect from these rules. So they picked about 7 or 8 6'8" fellas. Like, there was a lad called the Spider Everett, who was just like this giant of a fella.
Barry Hall as well?
I think this was before Barry Hall's time. But there was loads of 6'7" lads, and Ireland ended up beating them, and they were just driving it in long, and Darren Fay was breaking it. And the game has evolved so much now that both teams are picking running teams, because that's what the game is really about. It's about pace and it's about speed. And you're right, Conan, like, when you match up Ireland against Australia now in the last few years, there is no real difference in size, physicality, arm size, chest size. Ireland are on a par with that kind of thing, but it's lost its spark a little bit. I don't know, like, I'm sure there are still fans of it. I think the time of the year, the teams that are picked, the best players in Ireland not committing, it's bad PR. You know, you want Dear McConnelly involved. Gooch never bought into it. He's another one. Like, he's only played 1 year. The game just didn't really maybe suit him. But I don't know. Like, I mean, it'll continue on because there probably is a market for it to a certain extent. I'm only speaking from my own point of view. It doesn't have that same kind of buzz at this time of the year that it should. Anyways, Stephen Rochford, Conor, I'll give this one to you because you must be delighted to hear he's extended his contract. Like, we always say contracts here, but sure, gee, they're not contracts. Like, I mean, they're gentlemen's agreements, right? Yeah. So he's there until 2020. From a Mayo's man's perspective, that warms your coppers.
Delighted, yeah. I think we all had an inkling it was coming anyway. Definitely, that was the word the last few weeks, and he was actually at the county final at the weekend as well. Yeah, brilliant news. I mean, if you think back, it's only a few months since he was under serious pressure, even though he got Mayo to the All-Ireland final in 2016. When things were going really bad, there was definitely people in Mayo even questioning him, I think, during this summer. And then after the first Kerry game, he had that infamous Lions Led by Donkeys article as well. Yeah. And that's only going back a couple of months. But no, I think everyone's really happy, real progress being made. I just hope that... not sure. I don't think the backroom team have fully committed yet. I hope that they kind of stay on board as well, because I think Donny Buckley's been there since 2013, been brilliant. And I think a lot of people who would have played under or played with Tony McEntee would have seen signs of his imprint on the team last year. But yeah, it's great news.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. They've got big commutes, Tony McEntee, Donny Buckley. And I think Barry Solon has been coming just back at weekends because he's with Arsenal. So we're not sure what he's going to do as well. So some of that is up in the air, but Rochford is definitely staying on board. That's a nice statement to make after the two All-Ireland finals. There's not much more they need to do. So changing manager will be just knocking you back again into the unknown, whereas with Rochford on board, you know Mayo are up there next year for sure.
And there's not much more they can do. I think you said it after the final, like, they did everything right. He got all the matchups right. They played as well as they were going to play that day, and Dublin just won by a point. And the first final in 2016, they should have won that. So Rochford has taken Mayo to a point where they probably should have won in All-Ireland, and he's got them ready for that day. And just freak luck and Dublin being brilliant has stopped them, and sort of just keep going the way they're going. They don't need to change anything.
Yeah, I don't know how many players might have been thinking about retirement, but I think if you were borderline, I think Rochford staying on for another year as well will convince you to go again, you know.
Yeah, no, agreed. Right, lads, Dara Conan, before we move on to Aidan O'Shea interview. He is the latest member of the Clare All-Ireland winning team in 2013 to retire. Patrick Donnellan, who was captain in 2013, Colin Ryan, who was top scorer in 2013, and Brendan Bugler, who is like one of their main leaders at wing back in 2013, they're all gone. So like, there's huge leadership gone out of the team. Dara Conan is only 27. Dara Conan is kind of a different story because he has to retire. Because he was 26 when a surgeon told him that if he kept playing hurling, he'd need a hip replacement in 2 years. So he's giving it up to save his hip and not replacing his hip at such a young age. It was interesting enough, Marie Crowe has a very good piece with him on the RTÉ website today. And she has this, which kind of knocked me over. Honan, Conor McGrath, Keane Dillon and Sena Mori have all had hip surgery in recent years. All Clare players, and like, these are fellas who are coming through underage wins and colleges, and then Davy Fitz is grueling training, and they're very young to be getting hip replacements, and this is an issue within the GAA, hip replacements.
I always thought it was more of a football issue as well, though.
Yeah, I think any turning, any, like I suppose, movement issue, like, I mean, there's same kind of movement in hurling, you know what I mean, and overtraining. That's what they're from, I presume.
Yeah. It's not good for Clare, and obviously, like,
just because you only follow football doesn't mean that it's only a football issue.
I'm going to keep this very brief, but like, obviously they've lost for different circumstances, but they've lost Donal Oog as well, you know, from the backroom team.
Yeah.
So big change going into 2018. But I see Connor's got a pile of notes just dying.
No, I haven't done that. Willie's got them all there, but he wasn't afraid to blame the training that he's been doing with Clare specifically, I think. And obviously, you mentioned the lads that have got hip problems and have had to have hip surgery. And he actually, in Marie Crowe's piece as well, mentioned a good few players from outside of Clare in both codes that have had to have hip surgery. And Honan was saying that this is a serious problem in the GAA, and it obviously is. And it's not, whatever about the techniques, but I would say overtraining in general and the load of training to games is what's causing it. I thought it initially when I saw about Honan that, like, he's 6'7". I thought that might have been an issue of body mechanics, but that wasn't mentioned at all. So it's something that seriously needs to be looked at. And when you've got somebody who's willing to speak out about it, you know, maybe that's what's needed, you know.
Yeah, and I want to get Derek on the show, hopefully maybe next week, if we have room, because it's actually, Clare's so interesting. Like, I mean, we all know all the underage success. They won the All-Ireland in 2013. They haven't quite kicked on. Now a lot of the leaders from 2013 are gone. Like, I mean, when you think about 2013, like, next summer, it's 5 years ago. Like, these 20-year-olds are 25, the 25-year-olds are 30, yeah. and the 28, 29-year-olds are all retiring. Like, I mean, it's a long time ago that they haven't kicked on. And you look at the hurling landscape now, and you've got Tipperary, Cork, who are rejuvenated, Waterford in the All-Ireland final. That's just in Munster, Clare have to beat. Limerick are cleaning up underage as well. And then you've Kilkenny and Galway in Leinster, and Dave Wexford. Like, Clare, instead of Clare complaining about not building on 2013, I think Clare should almost be looking at the fact, thank God we got that in 2013. Do you know what I mean? Because, like, they have an All-Ireland to show for it. A lot of other counties don't. And, like, they've lost a lot of their leaders. Now you have all the young fellas from 2013 having to take up that mantle. And it's almost like, you know, whether they have enough to be able to compete with the big boys, which is weird considering they're All-Ireland champions 5 years ago.
The irony is the pressure that Davy Fitz came under because they didn't follow up on 2013 and the age profile of that winning team and the good underage teams. People just expected that they would continue to do it, but Davy Fitz didn't deliver it, so it was almost driven out. Like, he probably was. Like, so, yeah, that's funny now. They would just do anything probably to get another Munster title again.
Yeah, to get a Munster title. Right, lads, that's all we've time for because we've Aidan O'Shea interview coming up next.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge all night, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sloppy mood, Ed's good to sing along to. And then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
Yeah, Aidan, captain of Ireland, that's a nice way to round off the year.
Yeah, geez, you know, Joe asked me there about 10 days ago and I was surprised to start with, but I'm obviously delighted when he asked me, and looking forward to hopefully lifting the Cormac McAnallan down there.
Yeah, so you've scanned down through the panel and I'd say the first name that jumped out of you is Owen Cadigan is there.
Why is that?
So you have a recognised fullback.
Well, I thought that when myself, Chrissy and Harry were named in the squad for me, I thought he must have been looking at the Kerry game. I thought, oh yeah, that's a solid fullback line, we'll go with that. So I don't know, maybe we look at Cads in the corner, put me at three, I'm not sure.
So come here, I want to talk to you about the fullback thing, the conversation you had with Stephen, because I was talking to him and it was like just a week of that game, it was thrown on you that you're going to be marking Donaghy. He's obviously a specialised full forward. So how did that week go?
Yeah, it was grand. Like, look, they were pretty flirting with the idea of playing somebody in there with a bit more height. I didn't think it was going to be me, but he came to me the weekend before the game and said, what do you think? I said, well, yeah, so they said, look, I think it could work. I think it might do what we need to win the game. That was all that mattered. I said, look, if you want me to do it, I'll give it a right rattling. I look forward to the challenge, and it was a challenge. Like, you don't go from playing full forward, midfield, or centre forward all your life to going back playing full back and thinking it's easy. You know, it's not going to be. And obviously, from a personal point of view, I prefer to be anywhere else but full back.
Yeah.
But you know, look, from our perspective, you know, when you look back on it, I think both Dave, the objective of it works. You know, people think it didn't, but the first day we conceded two bad goals, totally irrelevant of me playing full back, and we would have won the game comfortably. And I think the second day we won the game comfortably by not conceding bad goals. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I think it got most publicity probably because the form you were in out the field. You know, that kind of way that you had been influencing games so much out there, to lose that and then to put you into a position that you'd never played before, that's probably where the big surprise came.
Well, I don't know. I think, like, if you look at our forward line that day, I think we scored something crazy from play that day in the game. So I think, you know, I think there was a lot of rubbish written in the paper that week about taking me out of full back, and I think it might have been to try and get me out of there for a reason. And I think, you know, and I'm glad that Stephen and the team stuck to their guns, and I think it worked the next day, and it worked the first day. We were happy with how it did.
It was actually weird the second day, because you'd been dominating the game on Johnny Buckley, you were playing centre half back, and then you went back in full back, so you're really keeping him on their toes, guessing.
Well, yeah. Well, it was just the way the game, to be honest, it was just the way the game started. I think Tony Shoes said to me after the game, he goes, the fuck were you doing? I was like, well, I said, like, things are going well up there.
So I'm playing really well
there's
here.
There's no point going back yet. I said, they haven't got the ball yet. So I said, we'll keep going. But no, it wasn't. It was, you know, I heard people thinking afterwards that it was by design. It was more the fact the way the game was playing. We seemed to have them pinned back in and things were going well. So we, I just waited until the opportunity to get back there and fit back in. And that's just how it really kind of panned out. It took us maybe 8 or 9 minutes to get back in there.
Right, okay. And, like, I mean, seeing the game from full back, has it given you a different perspective on, you know, the game in general?
That I don't want to play full back again,
but no, even ball into forwards, and, you know, the pressure out the field is so important because you can't give them easy, you know, if they've time on the ball, the quality of ball that goes in.
Yeah. Look, it was, you have probably a greater appreciation of how difficult it is to be a defender, especially in Croke Park. But you know, I was just so, I suppose, focused on trying to do a job. You know, I know, you know, there wasn't any greater expectation of me, you know, helping off my man or anything like that. I was just trying and stop high ball into our square. And I think that, you know, that worked. And but as I say, it can be a scary time at places when you see somebody like Dave Moran with the ball, who can do anything with the ball in his hand, and you're sitting one-on-one inside in the defence. You know, it can be a bit daunting at times.
You've had a crazy year, Aidan. Like, every year you seem to be in the centre of some sort of a storm. The first storm you were centre of was pretty innocuous, where you were asked a question at an AIB launch, and I thought you answered it, you know, pretty fairly, and said you didn't want to get into it, but there's some, you know, facts not correct. And that created a huge storm with the Independent releasing a statement and all this kind of stuff. So it was almost not of your making. You tried to defuse the question, but suddenly you're at the centre of storm number one. we'll call it storm number one.
Yeah, I'd be along the lines of what you said. I thought I was trying to defuse the situation and didn't really want to get into it. And then all of a sudden it's news for a week. And I was just like, wow. I said, how do you... I just didn't understand how it could... settle papers and that for a week off comment that I made, just actually diffuse the situation. But I've learned to understand that that's the way sometimes the media works, and you've just got to go along with it.
Because you've shied away pretty much from the media all year, outside of, you know, maybe today that you have to do as captain and that AIB event, and Mayo have kind of battened down the hatches on it. So maybe they've kind of learned that way, just to stay away from it, which isn't ideal for everybody either.
Yeah, I think personally after that, and then just what followed for the next couple of weeks around different things, I just kind of felt personally that, you know, I think I've been obliging to the media and throughout my career, and I just felt that, you know what, it was about me and just getting back to playing football and focused on getting back from injury, and I just, like, you know, don't really need any more storms in the teacup over the next couple of months, and that was just a decision I didn't take. Declare the decision, I just something I made kind of personally into myself.
Okay, and then of course we went on to selfie gate, we'll call this. This was number two. This was came pretty much after that, and, like, I mean, you were injured at the time, you weren't really on the team, and it kind of coming at a time where you're coming back from injury, you're not getting regularly on the team yet, and it's painting you as some sort of, you know, prima donna who doesn't want to do the kind of things that the rest of the squad does.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, you've played in plenty of challenges games throughout your career, whether it be with your club or whatever, and, you know, for me, you know, my dad would have played at Mullingar Shamrocks, won two county championships with them, you know, we were playing at Mullingar Shamrocks, the game was over, a lot of our boys had togged in, because it was one of those games where they played three thirds and two different squads, and you had half the me team off the pitch, half the me. And so I actually played the three thirds because, as you say, I was coming back from injury, just trying to get some game time. So I played as much as I could, and literally as we shook hands with the me boys, and we were making our way through our warm down, a couple of kids that just came up my way and asked me for a photograph. And, you know, unfortunately, that was painted in the wrong light. I know the club, Shamrocks, texted me afterwards to apologise for what I said, and you know, to be honest with you, I couldn't believe that this is actually a story.
Right, so you actually took a couple of pictures and then went and did the warm.
Of course, I did the warm down. You know,
if it was a case that you avoided the warm down, taking pictures with 20 different, I could understand that way, but that's not the way.
You know, it wasn't just myself that took photographs, and, you know, young lads wanted pictures with that more than just me. So, these are. You know, obviously somebody went on it and thought this was a big deal, and, you know, maybe You know, I don't think it was a big issue. Stephen never came to me and said, Aidan, what the hell are you doing? Yeah. You know, it was never an issue.
Because the story was then, obviously, because like you were injured, is that Stephen had dropped you because, you know, you'd gotten too big for your boots and you weren't getting back into the team. Like, I'm just trying to paint a picture of how you're dealing with all this stuff as it's going on.
To be honest, yeah, it was like I had the ankle injury in front of the league and I came back the last two league games. We got a result to stay up and then was training well coming into, and it was actually around that Meath game. And then we went to Carton House, where I actually picked up a flare up of my groin, and I was like, to be honest, I was obviously very frustrated because you're after having two best of breaks in your league. So I was like, fuck. And then, so you know, obviously as a player, you're like, Jesus, I like the championship's around the corner. I'm struggling here. So, to be honest, yeah, I just kind of got to the stage where I just blanked everything out. I just turned off everything, social media, everything off my phone, because it just got a bit crazy, and I was like. And put it all to one side, and I just literally, I know it sounds like cliche, but like, I just want, when we lost Galway, I was like, I just need to be ready to play against the next team, wherever we're playing, and I need to be ready to contribute, like, because that could be our last game. We weren't playing well,
yeah,
we looked a bit stale, and I just wanted to be able to contribute in some way, and, you know, and thankfully that day, you know, we could have lost that game, but thankfully we won that game, and every week was the same. I just wanted to try and get another couple of yards into myself, and every game try and improve, and that's how I seen the summer right through. And then, you know, I stayed away from all the shite that was going on in the background.
Okay, how did you like get out of the slump that Mayo were in? Like, because it was almost similar to last year, only last year the slump kind of continued right to the All-Ireland final. This year the spark came in the replay against Roscommon, and it was just that simple, just the spark on that day, or was there something changed, or how did
it's strange, like, I don't know, like, for some reason, I think maybe mindset, like, we want to get back here, like, really, really bad, we want to get back here really, really quickly, and because you feel you're so close, and then when it takes a whole, whatever, 12 months to try and get back, maybe our mindset is that we're probably 4 or 5 steps ahead of ourselves than we should be when we're playing against teams that, you know, we should be beating comfortably. Yeah. And we
you tend to sink to the other team's level, whether that's fair or not.
Yeah, we just don't, we let, whatever, we play for 15 minutes and we think that's enough to see them off, and then we just let them back into the game, whereas we just leave ourselves wide open to opportunities, like, you know, Clare could have got a goal against us handy, Derry could have beaten us for the last minute free with James Keels, you know, Cork, you know, we were the game wrapped up and we gave away 2 bad goals, so, you know, I don't know what sparked. I think when we came back here, we got a shock here against Roscommon, like, you know, we played well in the first half after a bad start, and we thought that would continue on in the second half, and then we just kind of played really poorly, we were a little sluggish, and we came here and we knew we were much better than that. We just said, right, it's 2 games here to an Ireland final, let's get our shit together, and we played really well that day, and I think that kind of bounce gave us what we needed.
Yeah, well, like, you're so experienced now, and like during the Derry games and the Cork games, obviously on the field you might, doubts will start creeping into your head, but say after the Cork game, are you coming back on the bus talking amongst each other saying, geez, we're a long way off All-Irelands now, or are you going to go, this is all under control, we know we can rise it when we need to, you know, what
I wouldn't say we're thinking it's all under control, like, but I wouldn't say we're thinking we're miles away from winning on Ireland, because we do, as you've proven over the last couple of years, when needs be, we can front up, and so it's a bit of both. It's more saying, like, well, why the hell aren't we playing as consistent as we'd like against over the course of 70 minutes and just controlling the game? You know, you don't need to be scoring every 5 minutes, but like just making sure the opposition don't score and just seeing out games. And we weren't doing that, so that was probably the more concern. But no, definitely didn't doubt us that we couldn't get back to playing well in Pro Park.
What about just to finish the All-Ireland final? I don't want to go too much into it, but just kind of getting over that loss, how long does it take, you know, to kind of clear your mind of it? I think it was one of the Cork ladies footballers or camogie players said it's like being dumped. You fall in love, you get dumped. You need time to get over it. Like, I mean, losing an All-Ireland final like that, I mean, how long does that process take?
Yeah, I'd say it's an ongoing process. I think, like, obviously it's raw, you know, when you lose final, when you're fully convinced you're going to win it, it's, you know, it's a shock to the system, it matters to you, it means something to you, so when you lose it, when you're convinced you're going to win it, and then you go out and we played a really good game, you know, something, if I look back on it now and you say we did X, Y, and Z, right, like, you'd be like, somebody told me that before the game, you'd be like, yeah, we're going to win the game, like, that's everything we need to do, but, it's hard because you go back to work and you're staring at a computer screen and you're trying to concentrate on what you're doing. It's hard because you just start to drift away and start thinking about what's just happened, because obviously when you lose a game by a point, it's not, you just analyse everything, you analyse every hand pass, every play, every kick out, and you're kind of going, well, we could have done this here, we could have done that there. And that can drive you a little bit insane at times, but you kind of just have to park it and say, like, sometimes, like, I remember watching the game, my brother, and just saying, look, you know, we were talking about, oh, we could have done that. He's like, look, we played really, really well here. Like, we need to appreciate that and say, like, yeah, we've done a whole pile well. There's no point beating ourselves up over, like, a missed chance or a slipped hand pass or whatever. We played really well and we just come up short against a really good team, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, it's not that I'm just matter-of-factly saying that. It's just that you can't go over every single play and beat yourself up about it, you know.
Yeah, cause because sometimes when you play really well, it's easier to get over that because you can't blame yourself because, you know, you did what you could. The team did everything was asked of them and Dublin just got those scores towards the end and beat you. Maybe it's better than not performing, for example.
Yeah, look, if you'd feel pretty shit for the winter if you had imploded in Croke Park against Dubs. And we knew that was never going to happen with us. We just, it's just one of those things, like, we, you know, momentum was swinging back and forth in that game. You know, when things looked against us, Leroy goes down and scores a cracker of a goal. And you know, just the last few minutes, just the momentum seemed to swing against us. Something that we'd won all our kickouts nearly all day. And then we lose two in a row. Like, just small things like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people say, well, you know, we're bound to lose one or two in a game, but they just happened at a time where we needed to really win them. And in fairness to Dublin, they got the possession and we didn't even get an opportunity to try and strike back. Like, you know, if we got the ball, you'd have to say we would have provided ourselves an opportunity. We would have got, say, Killian last year here in the replay or the
yeah.
long game. We would have manufactured something.
You'd have got it free
or something. So it's just, you know, it's just one of those things.
Yeah, just finally, you watched the game back with Seamus. Did you just sat down? It's like a form of self-harm there or something.
Just fast-forwarded it. I don't know what day that was. It was day three or four before we went out again. So, yeah, we had a quick flick through it. And, yeah, as I say, you just look at it and you can put yourself through the misery of every play and wishing and wondering. So I don't think that's healthy. You know, you've just got to, I suppose, park it and try and move forward to 2018.
Right, and just quickly, as a team, will you sit down and watch it together, or no, or just move on fresh for the start?
The last couple of years, we haven't watched the start of the year. We've maybe between the league and the championship, we've always maybe kind of taken key points out of it and just kind of lessons learned, things that we've done well. But again, it's important not to get too into it because you're not playing Dublin in 3 weeks time. You're playing somebody else, and again, if you start focusing on things that aren't what are in front of you, then you get caught like we have the last 2 years. So it's a balancing act, but yeah, you have to learn from it at the same time.
Okay, Aidan, thanks very much.
No problem.
All right, great stuff from Aidan O'Shea there. We will be back with a look ahead to AIB's club action at the weekend.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
AIB, backing club and county.
What a weekend we have in store, lads. This is some serious games because we have a mix of county finals and we have a mix of Ulster Club, Munster Club and Leinster Club. So, like, this really is the toughest, and I know AIB sponsored a show, but we know that winning an All-Ireland Club is by far the most difficult competition to win, because I lost an All-Ireland Club final. Where do you start the next year? Right back at the start of your bloody county. So you have to get through your county, you have to get through your province, and then you have to beat the best clubs from other provinces. So there's no doubt it's difficult. A lot of clubs have gotten over the county final stage. They're one third of the way there and they're starting under provincial clubs. So we'll start with the Ulster Club. We're going to start with Saturday. So Saturday night at 7 o'clock in Celtic Park, Conan Slocknail play Oma. This is a repeat of the 2013 final. 14 final with Slocknail's first, and they beat Oma by 1 point. Slocknail are 2-5 favourites, Oma 5-2 outsiders, which it looks like a pretty decent bet for Oma.
Yeah, and like, Oma are a serious side. They lost by a point that game, as you say, but like the path that they've come through, like, if you come out of Tyrone, you're obviously a good team, but they beat Ardbeau, they beat Trillick, the 2015 champions, they beat Errol Kieran in the final. Like, they've beaten some real established teams, like, and now they're on here to play Slocknail. And, you know, Slocknail they probably could have just swatted Kilkenny away, but they didn't. So they, like, you know, it's not like they're blowing teams away. Uma will be fancying themselves here, and they've got Paddy Crozier in charge now. He was a former Derry manager.
Oh, Uma do.
Yeah.
So Uma have Ronan O'Neill and McMahon's, right? That's their,
yeah. But
their...
Justin McMahon seems to be injured,
right?
So we're sweating on him, but I don't think he's going to make it. Like, but they've Ronan O'Neill. They've got Conor O'Donnell, who's doing most of their scoring. He has been for the last few years, and the problem there for Sloughneil is that Brendan Rodgers probably would have picked him up, but. Yeah, he's struggling. This is Sloughneil's 10th game in 12 weeks, I think, hurling
right.
in football.
Okay.
Rodgers picked up a back injury in the hurling, so they're sweating on him. If he's not there, that means you've got O'Donnell and you've got Ronan O'Neill in the full forward line, and you've got Carr McCaig and Brendan Rodgers, usually well-equipped for Sloughneil, but if you miss one of them, you're in big trouble. Interesting thing is, Uma also have Conor Myler.
Do they have Conor Myler?
And what they did with
he's
him...
wing back for them, is he?
He's playing a free role at the minute. Like, I was reading, it was a great sort of preview of the game in the Derry Post by Michael McMullen. But like, what they did with him in the game in 2014 was they put him up on Chrissy McCaig and try to curb his attacking influence. But now he's sort of running around free. I don't think they'll want to lose that. And Sloughneil probably won't want to lose Chrissy McCaig from centre back. So it'll be interesting to see what they do there. But
yeah.
He is sort of the link man. And yeah, like, Uma are a serious side. And it's going, like, what we all know about Sloughneil. We talk about them to death. Like, they are also, Paul Bradley might be injured for that now. But he's a top scoring forward for them for the last 13, 14 years. Like, so he'd be a big loss as well if he's gone free taker. But yeah, it's going to be really tight. 1 point in it the last time. It's very tough to call. Obviously, you probably just go with Sloughneil, considering how much they just keep...
You can kind of trust Sloughneil at this stage, can't you? You just don't think they keep a level of performance that they don't drop from. You can trust them, you know what you're going to get. Even having said that, though, I think Omar a great price at 5-2 against Sloughneil, who are on the go for so long. And if Rodgers, like you say, is out, that's going to be a big loss. The other one in the Ulster club is a little bit less on Saturday night, is a little bit less high profile. It's Derry Gonnelly from Fermanagh against Armagh Harps of Armagh, you know, so that's in Brewster Park at 7 o'clock if you're looking for something to go to. Right, so we're on to Sunday here now, lads, and we have the Munster Club Football Championship quarter final, Clonmel Commercials Tipperary 9-2 against Dr. Crokes 1-6. Connor, you're looking at this one. Like, I mean, Dr. Crokes are serious favourites for this, but they're on a serious roll as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like nearly like a relentless march to a second All Ireland club, and I think they're favourites to do it. And the last few games, kind of, you wouldn't be surprised because they won 15 championship games in a row. I think they've scored 14 goals in their last four. Michael Quirk did a good column on the Kerry County final there at the weekend. They scored 17 points from 19 shots, I think. I was just looking at the team. They've 13 in the same 15 to beat Sloughneil, and of the two fellas that were absent from that, Gooch was one of them, who was kind of injured carrying a hamstring into it. He came on, won a vital break in the end, and Ambrose O'Donovan, he's been with Crokes for a long time, he was the other man that came on. So Owen Brosnan actually I think only got on in the 64th minute. So they just seem to be relentless. I remember reading Gooch's book there at Christmas, and he was saying that at Christmas, that when Pat O'Shea came back from a holiday, first thing he did was send a message into the WhatsApp group with a training schedule for 15 out of 18 nights over Christmas. So, you know, it was kind of that's a measure of him and kind of how much they're going for glory again this year. So they're playing Commercials. Commercials were very good a couple of years ago in Munster Champions, Bet Nemo in the last minute, and they kind of ran ball at Ballyboden very close.
They were robbed against Ballyboden.
Yeah,
you know,
very much
they had them beaten
so.
In
yeah.
normal time, and Nelson, the centre back, took about 14
that's
steps
right, yeah,
to
when
equalise
he got a score at the end, yeah.
But to win it.
They haven't really been kind of lighting it up this year. They got two late goals to win the county final against Killinall, and they scored 2-8, I think, and in the semi, in the final, they scored 1-9 and 10 points. So, you know, against a team that are as clinical as Crokes, even with the likes of, say, Michael Quinlivan, they need to be scoring more than that. But I think that Crokes are 1-6 or 6-1 on, and you'd have to fancy them.
Yeah, before the county final, they didn't score any goals. They scored 14 goals in their four previous championship games. They scored 17 points from 19 shots in the county final, which is incredible.
Yeah.
They've had Micheál Burns at wing forward, who's a star of the 2014 All-Ireland winning team, he got 4 points from play. We know that they, you know, they have a great spread of scores. They didn't need Gooch. So they're looking really strong. I am, after forgetting the Dublin Hurling County Final on Saturday night, before I get to Sunday, it's Coola versus Kilmacud Crokes in Parnell Park at 3 o'clock. It's actually Saturday during the day. It's weird. Dublin Hurling Championship is on Saturday at 3 and the Football Championship is on Monday night at 7. So there's no county final on the Sunday at all. I'm not sure, maybe it's for air sport or it's for TV reasons, but it's a strange one that neither one is on the traditional Sunday for county finals. Imagine county final at 3:30 on a Saturday is just bizarre. Coola, obviously All-Ireland champions, loads of brilliant, brilliant forwards. They're going for 3 in a row. And like I said, it's a repeat of last year's final. So that's on Saturday as well. So we've got the Munster Club final out of the way. Also on Sunday is the first round of the Leinster Club Championship. So Newtown Blues from Loud play Rathnew from Wicklow. That's in the Gaelic grounds at 2. Mullina Hochta from Longford play Aeroge from Carlow, and that's in Pierce Park at 2. The big one in the Leinster Club first round is Road against Port Laois in O'Connor Park at 2:30, and this is a great game, lads. And these two teams have history. They've played each other in the Leinster Club a good few times. Road are 4-7 outsiders, and I think Road have a great chance in this game. Port Laois are 7-4. Port Laois obviously won their way through Laois very, very easily. Again, the standard in Laois is very, very low.
Does that not make Port Laois outsiders?
No, I might have those odds the wrong way around, actually. I think Port Laois are favourites at 4-7. The Port Laois are completely in transition. So from the team that played against Ballyboden in 2015, Carter Healy's injured, Brian Glynn, wing forward, is a physio. I think he's with Liverpool now, so he doesn't come home anymore. Craig Rogers, one of the stars that day against Ballyboden, he played intermediate this year, had a bit of a falling out with the manager, Malachy McNulty. Stuart Nerney played midfield that day against Ballyboden. He's concentrating on his studies, I'm pretty sure. And Brian Smith, who was very good against Ballyboden that day, he's living in London now. He's coming over and back, so he came on as a sub in the county final. So did five fellas in a county final for the first time, Port Laois did. So people don't really know this. See Port Laois back on the road again, won 10 of the last 11, and I think they're still as strong as they were. So you have Frank Flanagan, David Holland, Kieran McAvoy, Benny Carroll and Scott Lawless all playing in a county final for the first time. Port Laois absolutely in transition. Port Laois nowhere, I wouldn't say nowhere near, because these fellas are good players that have come in. But when you're looking at those five players who three of the five are arguably inter-county standard, or they would all have played Laois under 21, it's a lot of players to have lost out on. And then you had Zach Toohey, who used to come home for the Laois Championship, and he'd often hang around for the first round of the Leinster Club. Last year he didn't come home because he had his move to Geelong and he didn't want to get injured and ruin the new contract. Geelong have obviously maybe pulled the plug on him coming home this year, so he wasn't home at all this year. Port Laois just don't have that same menace throughout their team that they used to have, you know. That's the reality of it. And I think Road are a solid, good, strong team, and they have some good forwards. And the problem with Port Laois cruising through Laois is that they won't have been tested. These young lads won't have been tested. So I'm actually not sure where Port Laois are at. I'm looking forward to this game because of those reasons, and I think it'll be close. I'm going to go over to it, but you know, I see it as an even money
Road
game.
Have really put it up to a lot of Dublin teams in Leinster in recent years as well, haven't
gotten
they?
Close to them. They were in the Leinster final last year, right, against St Vincent's. Was that last year or the year before? Like, I mean, they never really stood a chance. Pascal Keenahan was their manager, and he's a very good manager. He's moved on now, but like, I mean, Road are a solid team, you know, and they haven't lost that many fellas. And like, Port Laois definitely this year will not have played a team even in the league of Road. So, you know, it'll be an interesting one, but a 50-50 game, I'd say, in that one. Right, Ulster Club. We're back to the Ulster Club, lads. We did two on the Saturday night, so there's two more here on the Sunday. Cavan Gaels from Cavan play Lav Dearg from Antrim. Have I pronounced that right, Colin?
Yeah, well, they say Lam Dearg. We had this conversation.
Yeah, we had Dearg.
Up in Belfast, they say Lam Dearg.
That's in Kingspan, Breffni Park. Probably the best one on Sunday in the Ulster Club is Scotstown versus Kilcar. This promises to be a great game. There's loads of county lads on view, and Kilcar are a real kind of, I don't know, they're a team that excites me, having not seen them very much. But the players that they have, they're young, their age profile, they're a little village. Mark McHugh compared them to Slocknail, who the whole country's fallen in love with because they're so, it's such a small area and they're so good. That looks like it'll be a great game. Added to that is Ryan McHugh and Kieran Hughes are great buddies from college, and Paddy McBrearty, Kieran Hughes and Ryan McHugh all live together in college. So Kieran Hughes is texting Ryan McHugh this week, and he's saying, "Will you? The match is in Clonus, so he's saying, do you want to stay in my house after the match?" And this kind of thing, like. I know, to borrow one of your lines, Conan, that is what the GA is all about. We have lost that at inter-county level, but it's great to see that at club level. Right, we're playing ye. We used to do this in the league back when, you know, 15 years ago, you'd be playing a league game against, I don't know, whoever, Galway, and you'd have a mate from college, right, sure, I'll stay up with you after, you know what yeah. I mean? And you'd have a few yeah. pints, and that was the great thing about it. So it's great to see that carrying on at club level.
Remember Senan Connell told the story about playing Kerry down in Tralee, one league game, Dublin against Kerry, and Tomás Vaché was like, it was a different type of sledging. Tomás Vaché, before the kick out, would say to him, "Are you staying down tonight?" Hit him a shoulder and go after the ball, and he said his head would be everywhere.
Yeah.
And this boy's really sound, but he keeps hitting me and stuff.
But that was the story, like, I mean, after every league game. And I think I was talking to Eddie Brennan, the Kilkenny legend, at the weekend. I was doing a thing with him, and he was bemoaning the fact that after league games, now everybody goes home and they do the recovery the next day. What harm? A league game on a Sunday, go for dinner and the team have a few pints together, have a bit of crack. You're home at 1:30 because nothing stays open on a Sunday night anyway. Is that really killing you? To be able to maybe socialise after the first maybe 4 or 5 league games and get a bit more serious then. But it just seems like that's going out after a league game now is out of the question.
We always used to do that actually. Now it's changed to tea and sandwiches. After a game, you'll find a lot of clubhouses will kind of lay it, and you really do appreciate it, and it gives
this
you a kind
for
of
soakage,
a
ch- is it?
It gives you a chance to mingle. But like back in the day, it used to be, yeah, if you were playing a league game away, it'd be stay on for a couple of hours afterwards and mingle with a few boys from the opposition if it didn't get too heated on the pitch beforehand.
Yeah, okay, that's it. So they're all the Ulster and Leinster and Munster club games. So we've got a load of county finals on Sunday now as well, lads. We'll just run through them quickly for anybody listening wants to go. So the Clare football final's on. Clondigad, that's Gary Brennan's club. Kilmurry Kilbricken are favourites in that. Cusick Park at 3. Meath senior football championship final. Simonstown Gales, defending champions, Colm O'Rourke's team, Shane O'Rourke's team, they're playing Summerhill in Park Talton at 3. Westmead final, Tyrrell's Pass versus John Heslin, St Lomans. Heslin, like, you think he scores a lot for Westmead. Have a look at his returns for St Lomans. An interesting one in Wexford football final, lads. And Wexford football final is generally not interesting to anyone, but St Martins are going for a double. They won the hurling, they hammered Owlert de Balla last weekend, and they're going for the double against Starlights, who are slight favourites. St Martins have Kieran Ling, who's obviously an incredibly talented footballer, soccer player, and he scored, played really well. I think he scored a goal for the hurlers last week. So just kind of hate the likes of Kieran Ling. You know, these lads are just brilliant at everything. So Munster Club Hurling Championship quarterfinal is on Sunday as well. That's Ballygunner against Thurles Sarsfield. So that looks like a clash of the Titans there. Really big game. Ballygunner won 4 in a row last week in Waterford. The Kilkenny Hurling Final, lads. So this is even. Both these teams are evens. Dixborough playing James Stevens. This is an interesting one. Kilkenny Hurling County Final is always a huge event. It's always a massive game. And like it usually gets national kind of coverage. Dixborough have Killian Buckley. They last won it in 1993. They were beaten in the final in 2012. James Stevens last won it in 2011. They're all Ireland club champions in 2004. But these two semi-final is a weird one, and I hadn't known about it. So James Stevens played Ballyhale Shamrocks in the semi-final. Ballyhale Shamrocks are obviously star-studded with Shefflin, TJ Reid, Michael Fennelly, Colin Fennelly, Cha Fitzpatrick, all these lads. They've won so much, but they're on the slide. So at halftime, Ballyhale Shamrocks were 1-8 to 5 points up, cruising. Going absolutely brilliantly. Second half, James Stevens won 3-11 to 4 points to hammer Ballyhale Shamrocks. So Owen Larkin, the Ballyhale missed a goal at the start of the second half that would have put them 9 points ahead. A few minutes later, Owen Larkin scored a goal, and then James Stevens went to score 3-6 without reply. James Stevens were in relegation trouble. You know, I think earlier in this year. So, like, I mean, they've completely turned their season around. Dixborough are looking to win it for the first time since 1993. It's even money in the bookies. So this is a great kind of game. Whoever wins this is just going to be, I would imagine, a big surprise, because Dixborough beat O'Loughlin Gales, who are defending champions, in the semi-finals. So there's loads of interest. And there's great little stories coming out of every county, isn't it? Like, I mean, they all have their own little kind of tales to tell. The big one, arguably, at the weekend, it's a county final, and this is the last one that we're going to look at, is the Dublin Senior Football Championship final. We already mentioned it. So in Parnell Park at 7 p.m. this is Ballymun Kickhams versus St Finsis. These are the two teams that if you were to pick out at the start of the year and go, this is the dream final between the two best teams in the county and they've both got there, and this is just going to be an unbelievable game. Ballymun Kickhams are favourites. They're favourites on because of the team they have on paper. Like, Vincent's have had their measure and don't have the same spread of inter-county stars as Ballymun Kickhams have. But you'd imagine this is going to be a fantastic game. It's going to be on TV. I don't care about TV because I'm going to it. You always should make your business to go to Dublin County Finals because the standard of football is so high.
Yeah, it's incredible. I think it was four Ballymun players playing in the All-Ireland Final with Dublin. Like, yeah. And it's one of the greatest teams ever. Like, you know, there's four of them in the club team. And then you go outside of that four, like the spread of players that they have. Yeah, it does look better for them individually. And with Paddy Small just tearing it up as well, like scoring.
Paddy Small, right, there's another one. So there's Paddy Small, who's an underage superstar, John Small's brother. You have Evan Comerford. You said the four inter-county lads who we all know about. So it's John Small, Dean Rock, James McCarthy, Philly McMahon. Evan Comerford is number two to Cluxton. Evan Comerford is an outstanding goalkeeper. It's just Cluxton is just a freak of nature in the goals and he can't get in there. Then added to that, Alan Hubbard played with Dublin for a lot of years. Davy Byrne was on the Dublin panel for a lot of years, played wing back even under Jim Gavin. Then you have Jason Whelan, who's been on the Dublin panel under Jim Gavin, wing forward, played underage. And you have Kevin Leahy, who's been on Dublin squads as well. What is wrong with Ballymun that Ballymun are not dominating Dublin and dominating the All-Ireland Series? Because this is as good a club team on paper as you're going to find anywhere in the country.
The Vincent seems quite good.
Without the stars jumping out. Vincent's are very good too. No, Vincent's are top class. But Vincent's have the return for it. Vincent's have three Leinster clubs, two All-Irelands.
Yeah, that's true.
Ballymun have one county title in 2012. Yeah. And one Leinster club to beat Portlaoise in the final. And then they were beaten by Bridges to throw away
a lead. They really should have won that game
Ballymun have very little to show for that talent.
Yeah, but sure, like, but then sure, Ballyboden have won the All-Ireland as well in this period. Like, it's just a ridiculous championship. On paper, they definitely look like the best team in Dublin, and that's obviously why they're favourite. But the Dublin championship is crazy. Like, and I saw a stat the other day about Jim McConnelly, my old buddy, but like, apparently he's got less average possessions than your average half forward, but it's just what he does with it. Like, and look at the
with Vincent's.
Just in general, yeah.
I would say that's with Dublin, is it? Or is that?
I'm raising Connor's ask that question.
Sorry, I had to bring it up.
What is this? Like, is this an investigation?
It might even be, but like, I mean, you have to look at it. Like, it's not. Dear McConnelly is, for Vincent's especially, he's a heavy scorer in the half forward line. They don't tend to want possessions. They tend to get on the end of moves and hold the half forward line. I think possessions are bullshit anyways, lads. I really, really do.
Oh, yes.
It's about quality rather than quantity. You can take a hand pass, give another one, take a 1-2. Like Kieran Kilkenny with 52 possessions, which is obscene. Like, that's a normal wing forward's possessions after three games. Like, the normal is around 20. But, like, I mean, you have to see what's been done with these and the degree of difficulty of what's been tried after you gain these possessions, because these 1-2s over and back, I don't get clouded by because there's number one, there's different types of half forwards who are trying to get on a lot of more ball, and then there's half forwards who score. I don't want my half forward scoring with 30 possessions, because then he can't necessarily score as much.
Well, Connolly's a good example of why possessions don't matter if he does have less
possessions.
Or
where the possessions
average
on the field are.
Yeah, and it's because, like, Stephen O'Mara does the stats for us on the site. He was just telling me this in person, but he said there was one game, I think it was for Vincent's, and he had 10 possessions, but he scored 5 times from play. He had 6 line breaks in that time, 3 passes that were replayed, you know, whatever it was. Like, and you know, that's the sort of stuff that he does, and it shows that, yeah, it doesn't matter if he has 90 possessions. Look what he's doing when he has the ball. He's winning games.
Yeah, so that's it. So John Small picked up Dear McConnelly the last time they played each other, because it was at that game, and I thought it was maybe Philly McMahon was going to do it. Because another thread to this rivalry is Philly McMahon and Dear McConnelly have gone to fisticuffs.
Pictured the jerseys torn off each other.
Yeah,
last time,
and that's a real heavyweight classic. That's one that you'd be paying in to see.
Like,
if they were going at it. Ballymun are not a team to be messed with if you want to go down that road of the fisticuffs. And I'd say Connolly and Vincent know that as well. So
they might need Philly to mark a man inside, though. Like, the Vincent's in the Verdi, Mossy Quinn inside. Maybe Philly be on one of them, especially if John Small is.
Philly usually picks up Mossy Quinn, and he usually does very well on Mossy Quinn as well. He marks him from the front, and Mossy doesn't have the pace he used to have, and you know, that's kind of how he pretty much nullifies.
Mossy tends to get a lot of scores on the loop. It's like, I just watched a couple of Dublin Championship games this year, and he's an expert at kind of as you said, he mightn't have the pace to win it out in front, but when it is one out in front, just to make that little arcing run and to kick points from the deed, that like they look so easy, but it was the movement to get him into the position to kick it that's most impressive.
Yeah, there's no doubt he's still pretty clever. So that's an unbelievable game to look forward to, and that rounds up the whole of the weekend's action. So like, people around the country are spoiled for choice. Lads, this time of the year for me is more enjoyable, is just as enjoyable. I won't say more because it's not fair to compare them, but it's just equally as enjoyable as July, for example. Do you know, like, it is, it's just non-stop games, and everyone has huge interest in these clubs. Like, I don't think people underestimate how much interest I will have in that Dublin final, or how much I'll be keeping my eye on Kilcare, Simons, like, or Scotstown. You have all these matches that you've got huge interest in. And I don't think it should be underestimated.
The per international rules.
That's it.
But it's funny, like, even as a journalist, you start freaking out, like, when the championship ends in September, and you're like, Jesus, what the hell are we going to do now? For, and then all these stories pop. Players become available more often, and they're much more open and, like, genuine. And, you get better interviews, and you just get those stories from all over. And them feel good stories that you're talking about, the scenes in Kilcare looked unbelievable. And you could, like, you know, the Moy ones in the intermediate we were talking about in the Tyrone Championship, like, just like, everyone relates to it because everyone has played at this level.
That's it, yeah. So, you know, the intercounty, really only me in this room can relate to that. So, like, all three of us can
really,
you know, and Ireland, yeah. You're kind of gone in that international rules chat. So I kind of had to dominate that chat there. Right, that's all we have time for this week. We'll be back next Thursday with loads more club stuff. Talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.